Good evening and welcome to Scratched Up Radio Theater, KKRN all-volunteer community radio. Our presentation tonight is Charles and Mary Bowles, a love story, written by Joe Graceffo.
Mary Bowles, the wife of California stagecoach robber Charles Bowles, a.k.a. Charles Bolton, a.k.a. T.Z. Spalding, a.k.a. Black Bart, sits at her desk. She has just been visited by her husband following his four-year incarceration in San Quentin Prison for robbing a Wells Fargo stagecoach of $4,000 in gold, assorted cash, and other valuables. With pen and inkwell in hand, she tells the tale of their long separation, the events of the intervening 21 years as recounted by Charles. That story was told on what would be their last night together. Charles left the next morning, and aside from one confirmed sighting boarding a steamship for Japan, he would never be seen again.
I must write everything down while my husband's visit is still fresh in my mind. He told me everything about the last 21 years. I want to leave a record for my daughters. My name is Mary Bowles. My husband is Charles Bowles. We were young once. Listen, Charles, a night owl.
Hoo, hoo.
Silly. He sounds so alone.
He is alone.
Isn't that sad, Charles?
Not for him. He's hunting.
Oh, Charles, what a practical man you are.
Me, practical? A practical man would be better suited to farming. I failed at that, my dear.
A failure? Really? Is that what you are?
Yes. Mary.
You who survived 3 years of hell as an infantryman? No, not survived, commended for bravery. A failure? You have given me 3 beautiful daughters. A failure?
No, Mary.
My God, Charles.
Yes, Mary?
If you could only see what I see.
And what is that?
Why, the owl through the window. Turn toward the light of the moon.
Yes?
You have the most beautiful blue eyes, Charles.
I was born with them.
Oh, you silly practical man. Charles?
The girls are fast asleep?
Oh, yes. Charles called himself Black Bart and came to be known as the most successful stagecoach robber in the history of California. He told me his tale last night, arriving out of the blue, finally released from San Quentin Prison. As of this writing, he has disappeared again, and I expect our brief reunion was our last.
Throw down the box.
What's happening? Why have we stopped?
Well, there's some commotion outside.
A robbery.
A ghost carrying a shotgun.
Here, sir, take my purse. Please don't hurt us.
What is it?
My purse. It's my purse. He gave it back. On bended knee like a gentleman.
I had no need for her money. In fact, I did not want it. It was the Wells Fargo strong box I was after. My quarrel was with that bank. You see, I tried to provide for my family by staking a claim in mining after the war.
My husband had been a sergeant in the 116th Illinois Volunteer Infantry during our Civil War. He received a commendation for great bravery following his 3 years of service.
The mine was successful, so much so that I was approached by 2 men offering to buy my claim. I refused their offer, so they bought land immediately upstream from my claim. They then dammed that stream, cutting off my water. A mine can't operate without water. I went broke. I later found out that these men were hired by Wells Fargo. I decided to get straight with the bank by robbing their coaches.
My husband was not a young man. He was over 50 when he began turning his shotgun on Wells' stages. He was a clever man. He wore a long duster and covered his head with a flour sack, 2 holes cut so that he could see. And he was a strong man, robbing every stage on foot, covering some 40 miles in a day, carrying a modicum of supplies, just enough to sustain him, sometimes not even that. You see, my husband lived the life of a wealthy gentleman in San Francisco on the proceeds of his robberies. And the refined manners commensurate with such a life put him in good stead when, in need of nourishment, he should happen upon a farm.
Mama! Mama, there's a man coming up the path.
Charles, weary from his latest robbery, had come upon the farm of a Mrs. McCreary, somewhere near the Eel River. He traveled under the name T.Z. Spalding in order to cloak his identity. Her daughter, Emma, just past schooling, or about 18 years old by my husband's guess, greeted him along with her mother. Did I mention that my husband, when not covered by a flour sack, his piercing blue eyes and distinct gray mustache allowed full display, was quite handsome?
Likely lost and hungry. We can't turn a man away that's wandering alone. I'll have supper on soon. You ask him to join us, won't you?
Yes, Mama.
Now show him to the stream if he needs to bathe.
Yes, Mama.
And Emma, take the kettle with you. Bring me back water for coffee.
Yes, Mama, I will.
Oh, why, Mr. Spalding, you cannot. You are our guest.
Yes, Teasy. Cleaning dishes is my job.
You'll permit me to set the coffee to percolating?
I will not. You are my guest.
Our guest, Mama. Teasy is our guest.
Mr. Spalding, I hope you do not mind my daughter's familiarity. She is not impertinent.
No, no. Emma kept a lookout for ornery critters while I bathed. We are on good terms.
Kept a lookout?
There are bears about, Mama.
Are there?
Indeed there are, Mama. We invited Teasy for supper, not to be feasted upon by bears.
You see, ma'am, the only bears I've ever seen were in the great and wonderful circus back in Chicago. A bear in the wild would surely be more than a match for me.
May I ask, what was your profession in Chicago?
I was a scout for the Chicago White Stockings, the finest baseball team there is.
Yes, Mama. There are two teams, 9 men per, and one man, called a pitcher, throws a sphere wrapped in horsehide as fast as he can to another man, a batter, who tries to clobber it.
Oh, dear. Such violence.
Oh, no, Mama. Teasy says people dress in fine clothing, sip refreshments, and applaud. It's a genteel game.
So, Mr. Spalding, what does a baseball scout do?
A scout looks far and wide for the very best players to add to his team.
And the Chicago White Stockings are scouting among the northern mines along the Eel River?
No, ma'am. That was then. This is now. I came west to seek my fortune in the mines of which you just spoke.
Ah, well. Despite your weary appearance, you strike me as more gentleman tourist than gold miner.
Well, I thank you, ma'am. Refinement never leaves a man. It does get worn down, a bit tarnished, I reckon.
Coffee's ready. Teasy?
Yes, my dear, I would love some.
Well, I'm sorry, I have no liquor to offer or tobacco for your pipe.
You two are all the spirit a slightly tarnished gentleman such as myself could hope for. Actually, I do not imbibe, and I have never smoked tobacco.
My, my.
Though I would love a second cup of coffee.
Well, of course. Of course you may. He's a nice man.
Isn't he, though, Mama? Thank you for asking him to stay.
Well, that was the right thing to do.
I should check on him, see that he's comfortable.
He seems to be the practical sort. I don't think he requires your attention.
I want to check on him.
He will be going in the morning. You do know that.
Yes, Mama, I do.
All right. Take him along another cup of coffee.
I will, Mama. Good night, Mama.
Oh, Charles, what can I do but forgive you your dalliances? I only pray that you didn't break her heart.
No, Mary. You are the only girl for me. My heart belongs to you.
That's not what I asked you. Wells Fargo stages were held up 27 times.
Throw down the box.
Robbery after robbery after robbery. Charles got away clean every time, until the 28th robbery on Funk Hill. The bank figured if frightened drivers were so hasty in throwing down their strong boxes, they'd just bolt the damn things to the floor inside the coaches. That did it. Charles had been in the habit of sending coaches on their way, then smashing open the boxes. This robbery took extra time. He commanded the driver to unhitch the coach and lead the horses off while he beat the strong box with his axe. Despite the extra time, he nearly got away free. Except a young deer hunter named Jimmy Rolleri raised his Henry rifle and the bullet struck my husband in the hand as he escaped into the brush. He kept the cash, then stuffed his shotgun and the $4,000 in gold into a hollow log and scattered his personal items. Among them was a handkerchief. It bore the laundry mark FX07. That laundry mark was my husband's undoing.
Pardon me. Pardon me, ma'am.
Oh, dear, you nearly bowled me over.
Sorry, ma'am. Urgent telegram for Detective James Hume.
Tell the detective his news ain't worth running people over.
This here note is about the man that's been robbing Wells Fargo stages. The same fella that San Francisco Examiner's been writing all them stories about.
Black Bart? The one that leaves poems to rile up the bank?
Yes, ma'am. He's my hero.
I've labored long and hard for bread, for honor and for riches. But on my corns too long you've tread, you fine-haired sons of bitches.
Urgent telegram for Detective James Hume.
Two floors up, second office on the left.
Telegram from Copperopolis for Detective James Hume.
And so it was that the great Wells Fargo Bank got its first confirmation that the man who'd been robbing their coaches and sullying their reputation for safety had been wounded.
Detective Hume? You found him. We got wind the bank was adding an outside detective to the team.
Detective Harry Morris, I'm no cowboy, Detective Hume. I'm here to help you. The bank means to put a stop to all this robbing. All these newspaper stories are making them look bad.
You've been briefed. You know about the handkerchief.
I know about that. And I know we got 91 laundries spread across our great city of San Francisco.
Then you'd better get started, Detective Morris.
And so the down and dirty legwork of tracking Charles's laundry mark, FX07, to one out of 91 laundries began.
Mr. Thomas C. Ware?
Fine tobaccos and pipes, sir. Briar, meerschaum, clay, calabash, and corncob. Please, take a look. You'll also find cigars and smoking accoutrements of quality and distinction.
I apologize. I have 316 Bush Street listed as a laundry.
I will take your clothes, sir.
What? I am looking for a laundry.
As I said, I will take your clothes, sir.
I've been trudging across the 49 square miles of this city for nearly a week. I'm dead on my feet. You were joking with me. Goodbye, sir.
I will take your clothes, sir. I am a laundry agent.
What the hell is a laundry agent?
Just what the title implies, I take in laundry for discriminating clients that would prefer visiting a convivial establishment over a large, noisy, oftentimes smelly commercial laundry.
I see. Do you mind telling me the name of the laundry you provide that service for?
Not at all, though you realize I am compensated for being an intermediary. If I gave away this information to everyone that inquired, I would suffer a dip in my income.
Well, I do need a cigar.
No offense, sir. Cigar aficionados do not need a cigar. They betray a love of fine tobacco that you do not. And you have no laundry. Why don't you just tell me what you're after?
I'm a mining man. I met a fellow mining man at a Sacramento hotel, and he described to me an efficient way of sluicing that requires only half as much water as conventional methods. He sketched a diagram on his handkerchief. I wished to thank him and discuss further business with him. He failed to give me his name, though I do have the laundry mark from his handkerchief. It is FX07.
I don't need to look up that mark. That client is also a friend of mine, a Mr. Charles Bolton.
Charles Bolton?
Yes, indeed. If it is advice you seek from a mining man, Mr. Bolton is as successful a man as there is.
Is he?
Yes, sir. I have on occasion brought his finished laundry to his hotel room. It is very well appointed, yet tasteful.
What hotel is that?
Webb House. Do you know it? 37 2nd Street, room 40. If you'll wait till I close up shop, I'll accompany you there and introduce you.
I can find my way.
You'll let him know that his friend Thomas Ware directed you, won't you? As regards business, A customary gratuity or percentage is proferred as an adjunct party to a business arrangement.
Is that how you see your role, Mr. Ware?
Why, yes. I am merely an honest broker.
I'm afraid history will judge you differently, Mr. Ware.
What are you saying, sir? What have I done? What have I done?
What he had done, dear Mr. Ware, in service of my husband's perceived business interests, with a passing thought to a modest commission, was direct the man bent on arresting him to his front door. However, Detective Morse was granted an audience much sooner than he could have anticipated. Charles rounded the corner of Bush Street on his way to pick up his laundry.
He was elegantly dressed, carrying a cane. He wore a natty derby hat, a diamond pin, a large diamond ring on his little finger, and a heavy gold watch and chain. He was about 5'8" in height, bright blue eyes, high cheekbones, and a large, handsome gray mustache. He looked like a gentleman who had made a fortune and was enjoying it. I introduced myself as Mr. Hamilton, a fellow mining man, and invited him to walk with me to discuss business.
Charles accepted his offer without hesitation.
I walked with Mr. Hamilton to California and Sansom Streets and straight into the Wells Fargo bank office. Yes, I was curious as to why this fellow mining man had brought me to the casualty of my piracy. Perhaps I suffered from overconfidence.
With the benefit of many years' hindsight, chastened by prison, Charles reflected on those few minutes it took to enter the bank office and mount the stairs to the second floor. Until then, he had lived in two worlds, as a feral being bearing only a rucksack, an axe, and a shotgun, striking Wells stages with a precision and speed before disappearing into the dust. Afterward, he would return to his adopted city of San Francisco, spend languid stretches in refined company, embracing the best life had to offer an aesthete and gentleman. He was ill-prepared to defend himself as the crimes he committed in one world accosted him in another.
Mr. Bolton, please let me introduce you to my associate, Mr. James Hume.
Mr. Bolton, I am very pleased to meet you, sir. Mr. Morris and I have a few questions we'd like to ask you about your mining interest, as it may pertain to our similar interests.
Pardon me, you introduced yourself as Hamilton. 'Twas less than an hour ago. My sometimes faulty memory wouldn't fail me so quickly.
You are correct, Mr. Bolton. I sometimes cloak my identity out of a need for personal safety.
I don't understand.
Mr. Bolton, I'm curious about your mine. Where is it located?
It's in Nevada, on the California line.
That's a vast stretch. Can you pinpoint it more precisely?
I'm sorry, I can't give you a more definite locality.
Mr. Bolton, what is the name of your mine?
I am a gentleman, and I don't know who you are. I want to know what this inquiry is all about.
Please, Mr. Bolton, if you'll answer just a few of our questions satisfactorily, I will happily tell you our reasons for asking them.
I see.
You appear to have injured your hand, Mr. Bolton.
I did it getting off a train on a recent trip to Truckee.
To Truckee?
Yes.
What are you doing in Truckee?
I was on my way to my mine.
About that mine, Mr. Bolton. Now, what was the name of it again? If you'd be so kind, Mr. Bolton, what mine and where is it located?
I am a gentleman and should not be questioned in this manner.
Pardon me, Mr. Bolton. I do not believe being a gentleman has anything to do with this. Even a gentleman should know the name of his mine, if he owned one, and should be able to locate it, at least roughly.
I did give you a rough account of its location. I'm a miner, not a mapmaker.
Where were you born?
Norfolk, England.
How old are you?
50 years of age.
When did you come to California?
After the war.
When exactly?
I don't remember exactly.
It would not behoove you to be cheeky with us.
About that mine, Mr. Bolton. Now, what was the name of it again?
I am done with your questions, gentlemen. You have clearly misrepresented yourselves.
We understand that you enjoy coffee, Mr. Bolton. Would you enjoy a cup? Unfortunately, we must insist upon a few more hours of your time. Detective Morse, will you see if Police Captain Stone is waiting downstairs? Mr. Bolton, we will take you to Webb House and search your room.
I hope that isn't too great an imposition, sir.
Charles knew he was caught. If the world is left with no other impression, it should be clear in the way my husband plotted and carried out the most successful series of stagecoach robberies in California history. He was a tactician who endeavored to stay two steps ahead of his quarry. To suddenly be the hunted rather than the hunter was a new and slightly disorienting experience for him. The detectives found three or four suits Charles may have worn under the boot-length duster he wore during the robberies. They found a half-composed letter, though he took pains to change the style of his penmanship in the two poems left behind at the robberies. It was his laundry that gave him away. Wrapped in a neat bundle, secured with a length of twine, were several shirt cuffs and collars and another handkerchief. All bore the laundry mark FX07. At that point, they arrested my husband. More coffee, Charles?
Yes, thank you, Mary. They took me to a photographer in Stockton, photographed me dressed to the hilt, diamond stick pin and all. This could only have been done to play up the gentleman bandit image that was already associated with my crimes.
You were. You are a gentleman, Charles.
Yes, and I'm grateful I was able to live that life, and will forevermore regret that I was not able to share that life with you and our daughters.
It was just not possible. You tried to live honestly as a farmer and a miner. Though Mother Nature and the coarse nature of those men that shut down your mine...
Wells Fargo operatives. Damn them. Damn them. Morris had to force a confession to make the bank's case against me, and that's what he set out to do.
I kept him locked up in a cold, damp jail cell for 5.5 hours, reminding him the whole time of all the evidence we had amassed against him. All of it circumstantial, as no witness could identify Charles Bolton as the stagecoach robber Black Bart. Still, the weight of it finally bore fruit.
It was obvious from the start that Detective Morris was determined to make his case.
He kept pressing you, didn't he, Charles?
A funny thing happens after many hours of being made to feel caught. You start to believe it. You lose perspective on the weight of the case against you and just want the whole matter to be over and done with.
You confessed?
Morris slipped just slightly toward the end. He let me know that the bank sorely wanted the 4,000 in gold amalgam I took in the last robbery. As I sat there in that clammy jail cell, left with just enough of my critical faculties, I reasoned that the case being brought against me was for my last and only my last robbery. No evidence was being presented to charge me with any of my prior 27 holdups.
What did you do?
I waited him out, and I didn't have long to wait. Wells Fargo gave Detective Morse their demand. If I confessed to the November 3rd, 1883 robbery of their Milton stage on Funk Hill and revealed where I'd hidden their gold, they would only press one charge.
That night, Charles told me everything. The dirty dealing by the Wells Fargo operatives that bankrupted his mine and his long campaign of revenge against that bank, and his life as a wealthy gentleman in San Francisco. I tell this tale with some regret. He did abandon me and our three daughters, though he did also make good on his promise of a long ago. He returned to me, if only for an afternoon and the whole of a night. He told me his story, and then he shared my bed as my husband. He has always been my husband. Charles returned to the Northern Mines and committed more robberies of Wells stages. I won't tell you how many or the details of those holdups. They will remain a secret I shall share with my husband. No lawman will ever lay hands on him again. Charles's last letter was written on the stationery of the steamship The Empress of China.
My darling Mary, I am bound for foreign shores. I have not made a good life for myself, though I have made a life. A failure as a farmer and a miner, it was as an infantryman I saw my greatest success. And that ability to endure extended periods of privation built the fortitude to strike an impregnable bank where it was at its weakest and win. Please give my love to our daughters. It may be a while before I see you again. I may be very old. You, my dearest, will never age.
He signed the letter Itsumo Watashi no Kokoro ni, and thankfully translated it, always in my heart. It was a hint as to where he was bound, the other side of the world.
You have been listening to Charles and Mary Bowles, A Love Story, written by Joe Graceffo, performed by the Scratched Up Radio Theater on KKRN Community Radio. Our featured voice actors were Bob Christensen, Laura Christensen, Dustin Davis, Jim Dowling, Lily Dubois, Charlie Finkel, Chloe Freeland, Dickie Magadoff, and Terry Orwig. Direction by John Welsh. Our technical director, as always, is Lily Dubois. KKRN is an all-volunteer station entirely dependent on donations and underwriting. Because of the COVID-19 pandemic, we have had to cancel all of our spring fundraising events. Please consider making a donation at this time. Go to kkrn.org and click on the donate button, or send a check to KKRN PO Box 188, Montgomery Creek, California 96084. Help KKRN stay on the air. Good night, and thanks for listening to Scratched Up Radio Theater.
I am a perfect gentleman. I never was a killer. I robbed that fancy Concord coach down by the Russian River. So here I lay me down to sleep to wait the coming morrow. Perhaps success, perhaps defeat, and everlasting sorrow. My name is Charles E. Bolton, blackboard on the dusty plains. I walk straight like a soldier and carry a gold top cane. I'll step out from behind a rock, level down my rifle, give command, throw down the box, and do not with me trifle. And of your lady passenger, you know I would not harm her. And when I've done my time in jail, I'll be a Nevada farmer. My name is Charles E. Bolton, blackboard on the dusty plains. I walk straight like a soldier and carry a gold top cane. I've labored long and hard for bread in days both dark and sunny. But on my corns too long you've tread, so hand me down your